Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday. This is Regina, and I am here for the 7 Steps to Awakening. What I do during this period of time is share quotes with you from the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening, and then I also share with you from my journal, which is a journal that I wrote while contemplating The 7 Steps to Awakening. So hi, good to be here with you. I was a little uncertain if I'd be able to take the mic right away because outside somebody was shooting off some fireworks, and whenever anybody shoots off fireworks outside, my dog goes crazy and she has a very loud bark. So just a moment ago she was barking and barking. I thought, I wonder if I'll be able to take the mic or if I'll have to ask them to wait. But she stopped barking just before you turn the mic over to me. So here we are on schedule. I'm going to start by playing a song just as an opportunity to get still. The song that has popped out at me is by the Beatles. It is called The Fool on the Hill.
Day after day, alone on a hill, the man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still. But nobody wants to know him, they can see that he's just a fool. And he never gives an answer, but the fool on the hill sees the sun going down. And the eyes in his head see the world spinning round. Well on the way, head in a cloud, the man of a thousand voices talking perfectly loud. But nobody ever hears him or the sound he fears to make. He never seems to notice what the fool on the hill sees, the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning round.
So tonight we are going to be starting with quote number 695, and I am putting a link to my journal 695 in the sanctuary. 695 is a small quote, but it looks like I contemplated it in depth because I have more than one entry in my journal. This is the quote. Thoughts are utterly useless now that the mind is dead. Thoughts are utterly useless now that the mind is dead. Of course, my mind is not dead. But changes have occurred. I don't know what to call them. So I'll just say changes. There's differences in the way that I know things and the way that I used to think I knew things. What I am very clear on is that there is thinking, which I'm going to call right now chatter, just to be very specific in order to help people really understand what I'm saying. There is chatter and there is intuition, which I'm going to call knowing, knowing. And the chatter is utterly useless. You know, there was certainly a time in my life when if you had told me that thoughts were utterly useless, I would have said that you were crazy. You know, in fact, I would have told you that I'm a very good thinker, that I have the ability to look at a problem from a number of different directions very quickly and to come up with a very good solution, but that I do that through thinking. I would have been very sure of myself, and I would have defended the thinking completely. What I realize now is that that's not true. The thinking is actually the chatter. Thinking, the thinking is very confused. The thinking is never satisfied with anything. If you do pick one solution, the thinking then starts telling you how the solution you've picked is not good enough. You know, it's never satisfied. It's utterly useless. There is an intelligence I've always used, but I wasn't aware of the difference between it and thinking. And now I'm aware of the difference between it and thinking. That intelligence does have a way to look, understand, and know without thinking. It can look at a situation. It can understand that something needs to be done, something needs to change, and it can know what to do. And it's not thinking. And as I really started looking at thinking through a journaling process that I began in 2004, I started to really tune in on the difference between this intelligence, which I often call wisdom, or intuition, and thinking. And I came to see that thinking doesn't have a purpose. I'm not saying that the human tool of a mind doesn't have a purpose, because it does. I'm saying chatter does not have a purpose. Never has, never will. And we can get by completely. We can even perform the most complicated tasks, solve the most difficult challenges without thinking. There's this looking, understanding, and knowing that comes from intuition. That's what we need. The looking, understanding, and knowing. So again, the quote we're looking at, thoughts are utterly useless now that the mind is dead. I'm going to look and see what I wrote in the journal. So starting with 695A. What is the ego, as best as you can define it? It is the idea that I am something. Over the next 24 hours, watch thoughts very carefully. Keep pen and paper handy. If ego is the idea, I am something, how do your thoughts promote or support that idea? Look as if you have no idea what the answer to the question is, and see what you find out. And maybe as we continue with 695, we'll see some of what I found out. I don't remember, and I haven't looked ahead in my journal, but I'm sure that I did this exercise. Whenever my inner intuition gives me an exercise, I practice it, because the inner intuition is taking me somewhere, and I want to go where it's taking me. So I don't recall, you know, anything about my situation in January of 2013. We were just starting to create awakening together then. I remember that general thing, but I don't remember what was going on in my thinking. But I know that in thinking, there's an I, there's a me. You know, there's an I that approves maybe of some things. There's an I that disapproves of other things. There's an I that wants to do this. There's an I that doesn't want to do this. You know, that I is there. In fact, when we look at our thinking very carefully, really carefully, which is exactly what this journal entry is asking, right? Over the next 24 hours, watch thoughts very carefully. Keep pen and paper handy. In other words, literally write down what you see so you can look at it very carefully. And when we look at our thoughts very carefully like that, if we really do it, what we notice is that thinking is all about me. Chatter is all about me. It's all about me. Even if it appears to be about you, it's about my opinion of you or my thoughts about what you think about me. You can't get me out of it. And it becomes pretty obvious really quick that if chatter has any purpose, right, the idea here is thoughts are utterly useless. If chatter has any purpose, the only purpose it can be said to have is to uphold the idea of a separate me. The looking, understanding, and knowing that I talked about doesn't have a me in it. It doesn't think like that. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it, but if you know the looking, understanding, and knowing, you know what I'm talking about. It is pure intelligence. But it's not thinking about me in relationship to this problem. It's not thinking about me as the hero that solves the problem. It's not thinking about me as the unworthy one who won't be able to solve this problem and everybody's finally going to figure out what a loser I am because I'm going to fail. It's not thinking about me. The looking, understanding, and knowing doesn't have me in it. It just is looking, understanding, and knowing. The chatter is all about me. Right? The chatter is all about me. So again, 695A was an assignment. What is the ego as best as you can define it? It is the idea that I am something. Over the next 24 hours, watch thoughts very carefully. Keep pen and paper handy. If ego is the idea I am something, how do your thoughts promote or support that idea? Look as if you have no idea what the answer to the question is and see what you find out. I will say this last sentence of this assignment is very, very important because the ego likes us to intellectually know spiritual teachings and therefore not truly look to the point where some kind of a meaningful realization can occur. So, like, you know, if you know from intellectual teachings that thought is all about me, then you say, oh, I don't have to look today. I know. Thought just reinforces the idea of I, and you just go right on, and no meaningful realization happens. It's purely at the intellectual level. And so that's why this journal entry ends with, look as if you have no idea what the answer to the question is and see what you find out. So don't go into this, oh, intellectually, I know what I'm going to find. Look as if you don't know and see. And seeing is very powerful. It's very different than intellectually knowing. Seeing is a realization at a different level, a level that has some real power, has some real usefulness to it. I'm going to move on to 695B. Again, the quote is, thoughts are utterly useless now that the mind is dead. And this is 695B. So this must be the next day. What are these thoughts you've found? And my answer, current definitions of self. When you look at your list of thoughts, do you find one definition that has been constant throughout this lifetime? And the answer is no, not one. So again, I don't remember what I wrote down in that 24-hour period when I was watching the mind, but let's just make up some possible answers. I don't know yet if in mid-January if I had the job title of President Minister of Awakening Together yet, because like I said, we were just getting started working on Awakening Together. I don't know if that had gotten to that point even yet. But let's pretend like it had. And let's pretend like one of the things I wrote down is, you know, I'm the President Minister of Awakening Together, and I have to make sure these things happen, right? And then let's say the next thing I wrote down is, I'm the mother of Jasmine, and I have to make sure, you know, that she's safe and taken care of. And maybe the next thing I wrote down is, I'm the mother of Jamie, and I have to walk her and feed her and take care of her. And the next thing might have been, I'm the owner of this household, and I'm responsible for paying the bills, and I have to take care of the house. And, you know, I'm the friend of Danielle, and, you know, I need to be available for her when she needs to, you know, just stuff. Right? Stuff that would have been current for my mind to tell me, you know, who I am. Stuff that would have been current in January of 2013. But it's a very interesting question that the inner wisdom just asked. When you look at your list of thoughts, do you find one definition that has been constant throughout this lifetime? And the answer is no. Shoot, if this is January of 2013, in December of 2012, Awakening Together, you know, wasn't born yet. So just a month ago, I wasn't the President Minister of Awakening Together. That thought had never occurred, right? Just a month ago. Of course, Jasmine, you know, she would have been, what, around 16, maybe 15. So 14 years before, I was not a mother. Danielle would have lived with us about 4 years or so. I would have known her about 5 years. So 6 years ago, there wouldn't have been the thought of Danielle, you know, I'm Danielle's friend. Jamie was probably 8 years old. So 9 years ago, there wouldn't have been the thought of I'm the owner of Jamie. You know, I mean, all of these thoughts, they're all so temporary. They can't actually be the definition of what I am. Because even in this lifetime, I am before any of these definitions, long before any of, even in this lifetime. So to call them definitions of who I am is simply not to look. They may be roles that I'm filling now, right? I fill the role of President Minister of Awakening Together. I fill the role of mother, the role of dog owner, the role of house owner, the role of friend, right? But they're not who I am. So what are these thoughts you've found? Current definitions of self. When you look at your list of thoughts, do you find one definition that has been constant throughout this lifetime? No. Not one. And is there a presence that has been constant in this lifetime? Yes. Most definitely. Without any definitions that come from chatter, there has always been I. And by I don't mean the thought of me. I don't mean the chatter. I mean this, which perceives. This, which is always here. I mean, I remember when I was 5, you know, I don't have a lot of memories from my early life, but I do have some. And I remember when I was 5, I've probably told you the story before, when I was in kindergarten. And we were having snack, and then we were going to have a nap. And I remember, you know, the teacher passing out little cartons of milk and graham crackers. And I remember the girl next to me, maybe even all the other kids, but especially the girl next to me, breaking her graham crackers so neatly on the lines. And I went to break mine, and I didn't break them on the lines. And I was so embarrassed, and I felt so unworthy. Now, the ideas in that story, you know, the idea that I was unworthy, that's a temporary definition. It's a temporary definition that many people believe very, very deeply. But I know it's not a true definition of who I am or who you are, because in this lifetime, I have transcended that idea. I know that to be a completely false idea. So the thought in that little story that I was unworthy because I couldn't break, well, listen to the story, it's ridiculous. The thought that I was unworthy because I couldn't break my graham cracker on the lines is an untrue idea. But that me or that I or that presence that was there in that scene on that day. And this presence that is here right now when I seem to be a completely different person. I mean, now I've got a grown body. I'm 55 years old. I have, you know, a completely different life, completely different way of looking at things. Certainly don't think I'm unworthy for not being able to break my graham crackers on the line. And in fact, I actually now usually can break my graham crackers on the line. I mean, you know, just everything has changed is the point. Everything has changed between that little 5-year-old girl and this 55-year-old woman except that presence, that I, that me, that observer, what's looking out of these eyes. That's the same. That has never changed. Everything else can change. But that doesn't change. That's the one continuity. In fact, even when I had that experience of being an apple, some of you have heard that story, when I shifted into an apple and I was an apple for a very brief period of time, and there was nothing human about that experience, but the I that is awareness, the I that is presence, that's the I that was the apple. You see, that's consistent. The same I that sees through this Regina filter mind and appears to be this Regina filter person, and the I that was the apple is the same I. And I'm certain with God's graces that this I could shift into this desk and be this desk. Because the I has nothing to do with humanness. It has to do with presence. So that's why the next question is, and is there a presence that has been constant in this lifetime? Yes. So the next question that came, do thoughts of definition have anything to do with this presence? No. I did find thoughts of identity that were spiritual in nature, because the mind has learned spirituality in the last several years. But I could feel those thoughts were still an ego claiming an I am this identity. The thoughts do not emanate from presence itself. You know, there are some really sweet thoughts that we learn. And actually, I think I don't want to take those thoughts away from anybody if they're still helpful, because that's what they are. They're like bridges. You know, like we think we're people. We think we're going to die. We think we're unworthy. And so we learn things like, I am the Christ. I am eternal. I am love. I am spirit. You know, we learn these ideas. Lots of these ideas are right there in the Course in Miracles workbook, and we spend an entire day contemplating ideas like that. But those ideas aren't really true. Those ideas are, you know, you could say pointers. But those ideas aren't really true. And at some point, when we come to kind of watch the presence that is what we are, we see that the presence is empty of specific qualities. This is why it has no opposite, right? I mean, it has no opposite. It's empty of specific qualities. And yet at the same time, it is inclusive of all qualities. It's like the space in the room, I often say. You know, the space in this room right here that I'm in right now, the space in this room is completely unconcerned with whether I am here talking on the mic, being loving and gentle and friendly, or if I give all of my attention to ego and somehow I'm yelling at you guys, telling you that you're all idiots and you should listen to me. Don't worry, I won't do that. But if I did, the space in this room would not care. It would not cease being the space in this room. It would not kick me out of this room. It would continue to be the essence of the room that allows my presence, whether it's a right-minded presence or a wrong-minded presence. The true I, the true self, the true watcher, the true presence is like that. It's like the space in the room, empty of and inclusive of at the same time. So these ideas, you know, that might have shown up in my mind that day, you know, I am love, I am spirit, I am Christ. Those are still mental ideas, and that's what was noticed. That those ideas were happening at the level of a learning mind, not at the level of presence, which was beyond the spiritual learning mind. Do thoughts of definition have anything to do with this presence? No. I did not find thoughts of identity that... I did find thoughts of identity that were spiritual in nature because the mind has learned spirituality in the last several years. But I could feel those thoughts were still ego claiming, and I am this identity. Ego here meaning a sense of self. The thoughts did not emanate from presence itself, because presence itself doesn't have those thoughts. The next question asked, without a need to define something specific as what I am, do any of these thoughts have a purpose? Now, of course, the looking is getting back to the original quote, right? And the answer I gave was no. I mean, when I looked at whatever ideas I had written down on my paper from that day, you know, I am the president, minister of Awakening Together, I am the mother of Jasmine, I am the homeowner, I am spirit, I am love, right? When I looked at whatever I had written down on the paper that day and it asked, without a need to define who I am, do any of these thoughts have a purpose? And the answer is no. You know, when we're learning these wonderful thoughts like I am love, again, those are bridge thoughts, and they are helpful for a time. I don't want to pretend like they aren't. They are helpful for a time because that's not who we think of ourselves as. You know, when I first started this process, first of all, I had it repressed, but repressed was the idea, I am cruel. I am cruel. That was my self-definition. I am cruel. And so to start saying, I am love, and trusting that that was true, was an undoing of the false idea, I am cruel. To trust that Holy Spirit's definition of me as love was more right than my definition of me as cruel was a wonderful first step. But what if I go beyond needing to define myself at all? You see, even in the I am love, there's still the need to answer the question, who am I? There's not yet the readiness for no definition. There's not yet the readiness for this, just the space, just the being, just the presence. When I transcend the need to define who I am, I don't need to be cruel or love. I don't need to be a body or spirit. I just be. I just am. I don't need anything to follow that. So without a need to define something specific as what I am, do any of these thoughts have a purpose? And the answer is no. The only purpose they serve is the purpose of giving a me definition. So when the desire to define one's self as something specific is dead, of what use are those thoughts? And the answer, none. If there is no desire to see myself as something specific, these thoughts have no meaning. And you can see how that points back to the quote, thoughts are utterly useless now that the mind is dead. We could word that a different way. Thoughts are utterly useless now that the ego sense is dead. Or thoughts are utterly useless now that the desire to define myself as something is dead. Right? Thoughts are utterly useless now that the desire to define myself as something is dead. Now that that is dead, thoughts are utterly useless. So again, I'll read the journal entry 695B. What are these thoughts you've found? Current definitions of self. When you look at your list of thoughts, do you find one definition that has been constant throughout this lifetime? No, not one. And is there a presence that has been constant in this lifetime? Yes. Do thoughts of definition have anything to do with this presence? No. I did find thoughts of identity that were spiritual in nature because the mind has learned spirituality in the last several years, but I could feel those thoughts were still ego claiming an I am this identity. The thoughts did not emanate from presence itself. Without a need to define something specific as what I am, do any of these thoughts have a purpose? No. So when the desire to define oneself as something specific is dead, of what use are those thoughts? None. If there is no desire to see myself as something specific, these thoughts have no meaning. One of the things that I noticed as I was reading through this journal entry this time, one of the things that was really interesting about this journal entry is it's not guiding me into my intellectual or learned spirituality. Notice it asks questions like, is there a presence that has been constant in this lifetime? You see, with that kind of a question, I can just check my experience. I can look. You know, if it had asked the question, and is there a presence that is eternal? I probably would have jumped into the mind where I learned that presence is eternal, right? But I wouldn't have stayed with my actual direct experience. So the questions that are asked are very, very good questions, and that they're leading me to look, understand, and know, not think. Look, understand, and know. Look at this lifetime. Understand there's been a constant presence. Know what that is, right? Look, understand, and know is not thinking. And true realization comes out of look, understand, and know. Sometimes I've worked with people when they journal, and maybe 50%, and this is a guess, so I could also be wrong, but it feels about right. Maybe 50% of the people that I've worked with when they journal, they are not yet looking. They are only writing down things they've learned. You know, like if I'm trying to teach root cause inquiry, they may be guided to ask the question, why does this upset me? And instead of looking to see what they find, they write, because I'm separate from God. Guess what? They learned that word, because I'm separate from God. They learned those words from A Course in Miracles. If they had never, ever, ever read A Course in Miracles, they would not have written down, because I'm separate from God. That didn't come from looking, at least not at that stage. Right? At least not at that stage. So one thing that probably at least half of the spiritual population needs to learn is the difference between looking and thinking. One of the things I might do, I won't do it till later in the year because of my schedule, but one of the things I might do is offer a short mini-series on root cause inquiry and looking and maybe journaling, and help people learn the difference between looking and thinking, and help people learn to actually look. If you learn to know the difference between your intuition and your chatter, and the difference between your looking and your thinking, you can actually guide yourself to awakening. Your intuition and your looking will do it. But if you have intuition and looking confused with chatter and thinking, which are really the same thing, you're just going to stay in the head spinning around. You know, you may get smarter and smarter about the course or whatever it is that you study, but you're really going to go nowhere. And I mean that completely. You're going to go nowhere. You'll spend 30, 40, 50 years going nowhere, chasing your tail. It's critical that you learn the difference between intuition and chatter, and between looking and intellectual thinking. So maybe someday I'll offer a little short mini-series here in the sanctuary and see if I can help with that, for those of you who still aren't sure. All right, I'm going to go ahead and click on 696A, and I'll read. Now, this is a really long quote, a really long one, so I don't know how you are. When I'm listening, somebody else is reading, and I don't have the book in front of me, and it's really long, I listen better if I close my eyes. Somehow I absorb it better if the sight is out of the picture. So you might want to close your eyes and listen to this quote, because it's a long one. It's 10, 12 lines long. It's very long. O mind, when you cease to be, all the good and noble qualities blossom. There is peace and purity of heart. People do not fall into doubt and error. There is friendship which promotes the happiness of all. Worries and anxieties dry up. When the darkness of ignorance is dispelled, the inner light shines brightly. Mental distraction and distress cease, just as when the wind ceases to agitate its surface, the ocean becomes calm. There arises self-knowledge within, and the realization of truth puts an end to the perception of the world illusion. The infinite consciousness alone shines. There is an experience of bliss. That's a lovely, lovely paragraph. That paragraph could be used to motivate one if one has challenges with willingness, if resistance is strong and willingness feels weak or non-existent. Now, it isn't non-existent. If willingness was non-existent, you could not hear my words. You would not be in the sanctuary listening to the sanctuary broadcast or listening to the audio later. It would just not come to you. Even if it was playing in the room, you wouldn't hear the words. So if you hear the words, even if you think there is no willingness at all, you feel like you're nothing but a great big ball of resistance, you're mistaken. You're wrong about that. That's just ego chatter defining you. If you hear my words, there's willingness there. But I do know that sometimes the resistance can be so strong. Well, let's say you don't have the emotional experience of willingness, because willingness can sometimes be like an emotional experience, right? When your heart's all lit up and, you know, you're feeling all devotional. Maybe you aren't having that experience at all. Maybe you just feel resistant. This paragraph would be a lovely paragraph just to kind of casually read. Because what it promises is most likely what you want. And it might help to remind you of what you want. And do you know how to overcome resistance? The way to overcome resistance is to remember, truly remember, what you truly want. When you remember what you want, resistance melts in the warmth of true desire. So let me read this paragraph again. O mind, when you cease to be, all the good and noble qualities blossom. There is peace and purity of heart. People do not fall into doubt and error. There is friendship which promotes the happiness of all. Worries and anxieties dry up. When the darkness of ignorance is dispelled, the inner light shines brightly. Mental distraction and distress cease, just as when the wind ceases to agitate its surface, the ocean becomes calm. There arises self-knowledge within, and the realization of truth puts an end to the perception of the world illusion. The infinite consciousness alone shines. There is an experience of bliss. All right, so let me read from the journal 696A. Oh, another assignment from the inner intuition. It is time to spend another 24 hours noticing the mind. Again, with pen and paper handy. Without the mind, all is calm and easy. Life flows naturally from its source of isness, but when the mind speaks with its worries and judgments, and those worries and judgments are seen as valid, life becomes tense and strained. For the next 24 hours, make note of thoughts that come from mind and add a ripple to the calm sea of being. Boy, that's an interesting experience. And you know, I got to tell you, this kind of experiment throughout the day will really help you become more self-honest. Because what this is asking you to do is to write down every single thought that shows up and causes even the slightest ripple in the calm sea of being. And usually we aren't doing that during the day. We aren't writing down every thought. And so there's these little ripples that come by that we quickly deny. We quickly don't pay attention to them. We don't look at them. You know, we just, you know, kind of stuff them and go on. In fact, one of the things that I learned earlier, again, when I was doing a lot of purification, I would have these really big, what I call ego attacks or ego storms. And whenever these really big ego storms came about, I would practice rest, accept, and trust. You know, I would breathe, I would journal, I would, you know, I got really, really good at watching my mind and not believing the thoughts. But in between the ego storms, when I was generally happy, the little thoughts, the little ripples would come and I would repress them without even seeing them. And what I came to discover, of course, as I watched this process, was I came to discover that's exactly what I was doing, was repressing little thoughts of annoyance, right? Little thoughts of judgment, things that were easy to ignore and go on. And it seemed like I would repress several of those, and then that is what led up to, at some point, the next ego storm, the next ego attack. So I learned that if I really didn't want to have these huge ego attacks, I also needed to be very, very alert during the happy times for the little ripples. And that's what this exercise is having me do. At any point during the day, you know, I could have just the thought like, oh, geez, I forgot I gotta do such and such. Oops, but the way I thought of it, right? The way I had that thought was like a judgment, a regret, a victim feeling, something like that. And it was a ripple, so I needed to write it down. You know, and of course I don't remember what I wrote down that day. That was a very long time ago, 3 years ago now. But why don't we go on? I'll read the assignment one more time in case any of you want to practice it. It's a pretty cool assignment, actually. It will help you become much more self-honest. It will help you not to deny those little bitty things that are so easy to deny because they're not big enough to force you to look at them. Some things are so big you're forced to look at them, but these are little, so they're easy to stuff, right? So I'll read the assignment one more time, and then we'll go on and see. Maybe we'll get some insight into what I saw that day. Here's the assignment. It is time to spend another 24 hours noticing the mind, again with pen and paper handy. Without the mind, all is calm and easy. Life flows naturally from its source of isness. But when the mind speaks with its worries and judgments, and those worries and judgments are seen as valid, life becomes tense and strained. For the next 24 hours, make note of thoughts that come from mind and add a ripple to the calm sea of being. Okay, so now moving on to 696B, the next day. were their thoughts found? Yes. And what did you see? To the degree that I saw a thought as valid, that is to the degree that I experienced some upset or agitation. And if the thought is seen to have no meaning or validity, there is no upset or agitation at all. Now, again, one thing that's really interesting about this, of course, the first question is, were there thoughts found? And the answer is yes. But the second question is, what did you see? Right? Not what, you know, what do you think about that? What did you see? So you see, this inner intuition is encouraging that look, understand, know intelligence. It's that look, understand, know intelligence that heals. That's often called awareness, by the way. That look, understand, know intelligence is what heals, not our intellectual thinking that's read A Course in Miracles and NTI and whatever else it's read. And therefore it knows so much. That's nothing. The look, understand, and know. The look, understand, and know. So the question here is, what did you see? And what I saw during that day is that the more I thought a thought was valid, the more I experienced some kind of upset. The thought could come into the mind, and if I saw it as an invalid thought, just the fact that the thought was there by itself had no power. Any power to upset came from me giving it validity, or another way to say that is me giving it meaning. So if the thought comes through the mind, oh, I got to do this, and I just give that no meaning at all. In fact, I often do that because I have a fairly busy life, you know, lots happening. And so one of the ways that the mind tries to get me is by having me think about something other than the one thing I'm working on right now. You know, think about all the other things I have to do that I'm not doing right now. And so the mind will send those thoughts in. Oh, you got this and this and this. And the way that I internally respond to those thoughts is, well, it's not really a word, actually. It's more of an attitude. But I'll try and put my attitude into words. It's an attitude response. And the attitude is something like, I'll remember that later when it's time for me to remember that. Like, I don't need to remember that right now. If right now I'm, you know, the last couple of days, one of the things I did was I created a, what I call a prototype calendar. It's what's going to replace our current schedule on the Awakening Together website, where I created a prototype that is going to eventually result in something that will replace that current schedule with a new schedule. So if I'm working on the schedule right now, this prototype schedule, building something new, guess what? The only thing I need to think about is what to do next, what to do now in this process of building the calendar. And if a thought comes up, oh, you have to download Pal Talk on the Mac side and test it for Stacy. My response is, I'll remember that when it's time for me to do that. I don't even need to think about that now. I just kind of put the idea aside. And because I put the idea aside, I don't experience any upset. But if I was to give that idea some kind of validity, like, oh, shoot, man, I got to do that too. And how am I going to do that and this? And I got to take down the Christmas tree and Ron expects this of me. Then pretty soon I'm upset. But where is the upset coming from? The upset is coming from saying the thoughts have some kind of meaning. Saying the thoughts are valid. If they just show up, and I dismissed them as having no meaning, as being invalid, as not applicable right now. I do that when I meditate, too. When I meditate, you know, thoughts will come in the beginning of the meditation. Thoughts will come in about what else I got to do. After I finish meditating, I got to do this, I got to do this. And I have the same attitude towards those thoughts. I'll remember that when it's time for me to remember that. Right now, you know, again, I don't go through all the words. It's an attitude. But, you know, I'll remember that later when I need to remember it. I don't need to think about that now. Right now I'm loving awareness. You know, so can you flip off a thought? I would say that depends is the honest answer. You shouldn't judge a thought. If you have a personality type where you can kind of jokingly flip off a thought as a way of letting go of it and really you're not giving it hardly any meaning at all, sure. You know, that could be your little inner sign. You kind of imagine yourself flipping it off and it's gone. But if there's an actual judgment, an actual resistance to the thought that comes along with the flipping off, then no. Barb said if she's not meditating, she just writes it down for later. That's another thing I'll do in the morning when I wake up, often before I'm meditating, while I'm having coffee. A lot of all the things I have to do that day will start pouring into my mind. And I haven't started meditating yet. I'm having coffee. I just write everything down that comes. I like to do that too. I just write it all down. All right, so were there thoughts found? Yes. And what did you see? To the degree that I saw a thought as valid, that is to the degree that I experienced some upset or agitation. And if the thought is seen to have no meaning or validity, there is no upset or agitation at all. And that's it for 696. We only have 3 minutes left, so there isn't really time for me to go into 697, but I loved this long 696 quote. Oh, yeah, Dancer says she often emails herself. I do that also if I'm away. I do that more if I'm away from the house. Or sometimes you guys will ask me to do something, but the way that you ask me to do it is not in my email. I'll tell you another little work habit that I have that's helpful is that I keep things in my email box only until they're accomplished, and then I delete them. So I don't keep everything in my email, but if you send me an email asking me to do something, I keep it there until I do it and then I delete it. So sometimes if you ask me in some other way, you didn't email me, you called me or something like that, I will put it in an email and email it to myself because in a way my inbox is my to-do list, right? And so I want it there in that queue. So I will sometimes email myself with your request so that it's right there and my eyes will see it. All right, so let me read 696 from the Yoga Vasistha again because it's so beautiful and then we'll be done. Oh, mind, when you cease to be, all the good and noble qualities blossom. There is peace and purity of heart. People do not fall into doubt and error. There is friendship which promotes the happiness of all. Worries and anxieties dry up. When the darkness of ignorance is dispelled, the inner light shines brightly. Mental distraction and distress cease, just as when the wind ceases to agitate its surface, the ocean becomes calm. There arises self-knowledge within, and the realization of truth puts an end to the perception of the world illusion. The infinite consciousness alone shines. There is an experience of bliss. All right, I'm going to let go of the mic, and I will see you guys in 2 hours for the daily contemplation. Bye. Oh, wait, I want to say one more thing real quick. For those of you who don't know, we are starting daily meditations in the sanctuary, 6 a.m. Eastern Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Time, two different times. Is that right? No, that's wrong. That was Mountain Time. Rewind, forget everything I just said. It's 8 a.m. Eastern Time and 10 a.m. Eastern Time, right? Those are the two meditations, 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. And I will be here tomorrow morning for the 8 a.m. one. So if you want to kick off the first business week of January 2016 with meditation, please join me in the morning, 8 a.m. Eastern Time. That's 5 a.m. Pacific, so that if that's too early, show up at 10 a.m. I won't be here then. I'll be teaching a class, an MPP class by then, but somebody will be here to lead a meditation at 10 a.m. Eastern. That's 7 Pacific. Sorry for screwing up the times. Bye-bye. And Igor has his hand up. I don't know if you guys want to turn the mic over to him, but I'm letting go. Bye.